Parsha VaYishlach, of course, the general story you all know, the general story is one that Yaakov Avinu re-enters the land of Israel. And just as a general statement, I think it'd be fair to say that Yaakov had an unbelievably difficult life. Every single thing is complex. If Yaakov had to put his status, I think he would always write complicated. I mean, everything is always complicated about what happens with him, and nothing is simple. And of course, the great irony is that, you know, Ish Tam, Tam, you know, gives you the impression everything is simple, straightforward, and clear, and it just doesn't seem to work out that way. As he comes back to Israel, you know right away that there's going to be a problem. The problem is going to be one of Esav, and he actually reaches out first, tries to reach out towards Esav, and tries to see if, you know, basically take his temperature, what's going on, how does he feel, and so on. And the response that he gets is that Esav is coming towards him together with 400 men. Now, the great irony of this parsha is that when it comes to the conflict with Esav, at the end of the day, Yaakov is able to avoid confrontation. At the end of the day, whatever strategies he has ends up working. By the way, some of the strategies the rabbis are happy with, and some of the rabbis they're not all that happy with. But at the end of the day, Yaakov is successful, and what really could have been, you know, terrible was avoided. You know, if you think about it, you know, the first scene that we have where we meet Yaakov, which scene was that? The first scene in the Torah where we meet Yaakov. What happened in that scene? Okay, so it's actually in utero where Yaakov and Esav are struggling. So we have over here this preset, the struggle between Yaakov and Esav. That's a given, right? That's what Rivka knows, and that's what's going to be, and that's how history is going to play out. We have the struggle between Yaakov and Esav. So when we get to this week's parsha, there's actually two elements. One is when they actually meet, and then conflict is avoided. And we easily could have anticipated that, given the, you know, this were literature. Right? So we have the, what would that term be? You have the, it's not the, you're given like a warning of what's going to happen afterwards. It's this, what word?
Foreboding.
There's a better word than that, but whatever. We'll erase that if you want. There's foreshadowing. It's probably a better word. It's foreshadowing. You have the foreshadowing of the struggle that's going to take place already in utero, that they are struggling with one another. And then when we actually get to the fight, it doesn't happen. So what does Yaakov do? So you all know what he does. You know, he sends bribes, and he prays, and he actually has another strategy, and that is a strategy of dividing the camp, that just in case there will be some kind of massacre, so then, you know, if he attacks one, the other will get away, and whatever. So he uses strategy. And the rabbis, this is the sources which are from page 3 on the bottom, onward. Look at the Ramban in source 16. Nechtuva harparsha hazot logiyati ki tzila kadosh baruch hu et avdo v'galo miyad chazak mimenu. This is to tell you that God saved his servant, Yaakov, and saved him from a hand stronger than him. V'yishlech malach v'yitzileu, sends an angel to save him. Ulamdenu od shehu lo batach b'tzidkato v'shetel ba'atzla b'chol yicholto. V'yesh ba'od remez l'dorot, ki kol asher ira la'avinu im Esav achiv, ye'era lanu tamid im b'nei Esav. The Ramban writes that there's foreshadowing over here in terms of what's going to be the relationship between the Jews and between the children of Esav throughout history. And again, the Ramban is getting this from the various Midrashim and Bereshit Rabbah in sources 19 and 20, that this is not just a biblical story. This becomes this kind of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim for us in the future, which means the strategies that Yaakov takes is really what's going to be done in the future. I do want to note, look at 18. the Ramban writes in the middle. Rabotenu ra'u od b'ze itza amru Rabbi Yanai kad havasalok l'machuta have mistako b'hadar parshata v'lo l'nisa v'imei Roma'in. That whenever the rabbis would go to see the Romans, they would always review Parshat Vayishlach before they would go. Review the strategies that were taken there, which is they saw this as prescriptive, as this is what we should be doing, following Yaakov's advice. I had heard years and years ago, I actually wrote something about this week, but I heard years and years ago that when Menachem Begin came to America for the Camp David Accords, that he stopped in New York first, and he met with Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Soloveitchik, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and all three of them told him this source, this Yerushalmi, the Medrash as well, saying that before you go meet with these people, you should go over Parshat Vayishlach very, very carefully. You know, if three rabbis ever give you anything, you know, it's almost miraculous. So, just to continue in the next line, it says, "Mipnei shehayta kabbalah biyadam shezu parshat galut," that these are the instructions for galut. That I think is very, very interesting. That this is the rules for galut. What do you do in galut? You bribe the Lord with a small L, right? You bribe the person who's in charge. You pray, you divide, which is also a very interesting philosophical approach in terms of galut, because it's telling us that you need to divide the camps. If you look at the Medrash in source 19, it says, "Vayichatz et ha'am lelamdecha der Torah derech eretz." Or some of you would say in English, don't put all your money in the same basket. Don't put it all in one corner. And he quotes another source. So the Medrash is saying is that we need different Jewish communities. So the Ramban understands from this that this is really a galut mentality, in the sense that why do we need so many communities from so many places in the galut, in order that there's always going to be somebody who's going to suffer through anti-Semitism, going from pogroms to crusades, holocausts, whatever else it may be, and therefore the other ones will end up succeeding. Say, this is a strategy. Again, we always would have thought as a galut, as a punishment, you know, this is a strategy for Jewish survival. Because again, theoretically, we could have been a whole community taken from point A to point B. So this is trying to say, at least the way the Ramban understands, that this is a strategy for galut. So I do want to point out that Yaakov, for the whole first part of this parasha, is still outside the land of Israel. You can look where the various, on the maps, look where these various places are. He's still outside. And it's actually Esav cuts him off before he enters into the land. All this happens still outside what we would call today Jordan. So, getting back to our point, as I said, some of the things the rabbis like, some they don't like. One of the things they don't like is how, to what extent Yaakov bows down to Esav, gives honor to Esav, and so on. On the other hand, you know, you can ask yourself an easy question: how much can you judge him? I mean, he thinks his life is in danger. Again, very, very honestly, that he's terrified, and of course he does what he can. Now, Yaakov divides everything up, which leads us to our first source, source number one. Vayivater Yaakov levado. Yaakov then, after dividing everyone up, Yaakov is all by himself. Vayavek ish imo ad alot ha-shachar. And a man wrestles with him until the morning. Now, how we're going to understand this passage, we'll see, I think it'll end up taking up most of our time today. In that first pasuk, there's an impossible contradiction. Yaakov's by himself, and a man wrestles with him. So we're obviously missing a clause, right? You could say, I was walking down a lonely, dark street at night, and then I was accosted by, I was all alone, and then I was accosted by somebody. But accosted by somebody, which means, Yaakov was by himself, a man wrestles with him. Where's that other clause? If he's by himself, then why is somebody wrestling with him? So something's missing, and we're going to have to fill in that something. Now, what do all of us know, any of us who've been indoctrinated by yeshiva learning, so what do we all know? Who's the one who attacks him? The one who attacks him is Saroshel Esav. Right, that's what Rashi tells us, that's what the commentaries tell us, the Midrash says this, that Yaakov is attacked by Saroshel Esav, by the angel of Esav. Which then, without reading any further, then creates for us a really interesting issue. That when it comes to the foreshadowing, we have Yaakov wrestling with Esav. When it comes to the reality, Yaakov avoids the battle with Esav. Again, the bribes, the bowing down, and whatever else. But when it comes to the night before, we do have a battle taking place. So the foreshadowing was the foreshadowing for this, and not the foreshadowing for the meeting that's going to take place the next morning. Is that clear? I mean, do you all appreciate why that's ironic? Because all of us, if we were reading that original thing, we'd go, oh, there's going to be, if that is foreshadowing, something, there's going to be a conflict. And what does the Ramban say? Yeah, this is true. This is going to happen throughout history. We're constantly going to be involved with struggles. Of course, if this really is what's going to happen throughout history, you know, the one thing missing is our success. It seems to me that more often than not, we got the worst hand, the worst part of the battle, rather than the better part of the battle. Right? We suffered a lot during these battles between Yaakov and Esav. So based upon all of this, we're really left with one little problem, and that is, you know, who is Yaakov's mysterious adversary? So you say, who's his? Now the truth is, how cynical do you want to be? You want to be very cynical. Say a Jew walked up the street and got mugged and got beat up. Does that bother you at all? No, that's the way history works. Jews get beat up. I mean, why do you have to ask what the motivation was? Was he wearing a yarmulke? Are you wearing of course a Jew got beat up. I mean, is that too cynical for you or no? Should I say the same thing in political terms over here in Israel? Do we even ask, so hold it, why did this person attack them? So unfortunately, we all know the answers to this. Unfortunately, we're used to this. Now, I can say something even more cynical. You can use this for this week's parsha. This is good. You use this. You don't have to listen to anything else I say today. When the sons of Yaakov went into Shechem and they wiped out the whole city, so why did they circumcise them first? So of course the answer would be, it's because if I circumcised them first, then they made them weaker, vulnerable, easier to kill them. But that's not the answer. The answer is by circumcising them, they were all Jewish. A bunch of Jews got killed, nobody cared. There was no UN investigations. Okay, a Jewish city got killed. Is that cynical? Of course it's cynical. You're going to use that? Yeah, I'm saying that unfortunately is what we... is how we've been trained. It's how we think. It's how we look at things. So so here, Yaakov's traveling by himself. He's all by himself. He's vulnerable. And somebody attacks him. So we don't even bother. We don't even bother having to ask ourselves these kinds of questions. So who is this mysterious assailant? And why does he attack them? What's the point of attacking him? So I'm just mentioning all that before we actually look at any more words. V'yivater Yaakov l'vado v'yavek ishimo adalot ha'shachar. Now, Adalot HaShachar is also interesting because what's going to happen at daybreak? For real, what's going to happen? Don't start with me with Midrashim now. What's really going to happen at daybreak? Esav's going to show up, which means daybreak is going to be a problem. Esav's going to be there with his 400 men. That's an issue. Vayomer, sorry. Pasuk Vav. Vayar, and he saw, Kilo Yochalo, that he could not defeat him. Do you notice what's difficult with that verse and why? At least my editor would not let me get away with that. What's the problem with those words? Vayar ki lo yachalo. Vayiga bekaf yericho. What's the problem there so far? You're being modest by your lack of speech? The problem is that it's not told who. He saw he could not defeat him.
But the second part.
Okay. It's only when we start working backwards we can start to make sense of it. But as I said, my editor would not let me get away with that. He saw he could not defeat him, and he struck his hollow of his thigh. Then we have almost this necessary, unnecessary statement, which could have been avoided by being clearer in the first half. But take a kach yerich Yaakov bevekeo imo, and Yaakov's thigh was hurt when he wrestled with him. So do you realize you only needed the second clause? You needed to fix the first clause. You did not need both clauses. Well, you don't recognize that. It bothers us when things are written in an unclear fashion. That bothers us. It bothers us when there are extra words, and there seems to be extra words. Pasuk of Zion. Vayomer, and he said, Shalcheni, ki alah hashachar. Send me away, release me, for the dawn is about to break. Again, we don't know what the issue is. We also don't know who's speaking. Vayomer, we still don't know who's speaking. Lo ashalachacha, ki imberachtani. I'm not going to let you go unless you bless me. Vayomer Elav, he said to him, Ma Shemecha, what's your name? Vayomer Yaakov. He said, Yaakov. Vayomer, Lo Yaakov Yemar Od Shimcha. Your name will no longer be Yaakov. Ki Im Yisrael. You will be Yisrael. Ki Sarita Im Elokim Ven Hashem Vatuchal. For you've struggled against God and against man, and you've been victorious. So now, who is this person who has the right of changing Yaakov's name? Which, by the way, we all know that his name is not really ever changed, because he ends up having two names. What is he, when he says, your name will no longer be Yaakov, so is that true, is it not true? And you know, where does all this come from? Then we get this other part, which is difficult. But Yishal Yaakov Yomer, he gadu no shemecha. Yaakov says, tell me your name. Yomer, lamazet tishal shmei. Why are you asking my name? By the way, there are some commentaries who say that's his name. His name is lamazet tishal shmei. That's his name. But you, I think you recognize it's not the easiest interpretation. V'yavarech oto sham, and he blessed him there. And what blessing did he give him? V'yikro Yaakov shema kom Pniel. Yaakov calls the name of the place Pniel. Kiriti Elokim panimo panim v'tinatzel nafshi. I saw God face to face and my life was saved. V'yizrach lo Hashemesh kasher varo Pnuel, et Pnuel. And the sun rose as it passed by Pnuel. V'hut soleya yericho, and Yaakov is limping. Al-Kain, and that's a very now interesting conclusion, lo yachlu b'nei Yisrael gid hanasha. Jews no longer will eat the gid hanasha, the part of the thigh, asher al-kaf yareach ad ayom, al-kaf yareach, and the howl of thigh till this day, ki nagah b'kaf yareach Yaakov b'gid hanasha, because Yaakov's thigh was hurt in the gid hanasha. And all we can say to this is thank God he didn't break a rib. Right? Right. Okay. Some commentaries, some say clearer, some others, some hint that this whole sequence is written in such a difficult fashion because it's a dream. Of course, that's missing. It doesn't say it. The Rambam, the Mor Nevuchim, the Ibn Ezra, and others will say that this is a dream sequence. By the way, once I say it's a dream, then I think a lot of other things tend to make sense. Why? Because in dreams, things don't make sense. Dreams have, you know, people appear, people disappear, things happen, whatever. Of course, then this becomes this wonderful dream that he wakes up and he's still holding the red flower in his hand. Or he wakes up and he's still limping, as the case may be over here. But some element of the dream then moves into real life. The weakness of this interpretation of saying it's a dream is the real impact that takes place afterwards. Okay. Everything good till now? Yes? So, years and years and years ago, when I wrote my first book, actually a number of years before I wrote it, I made a suggestion, which subsequently I've heard other people make. I've never seen anybody write it. I've heard rumors, but I've never seen it said. So if I can find someone else, I would quote them. So I made a very simple suggestion. I've also never seen anybody bring the proof that I brought. But my suggestion is taking the first verse over here at face value and believing exactly what it says. And what's that? Le'yivater Yaakov levado. Yaakov's all by himself. Ve'yavek ishim ado l'toshachar. And Yaakov wrestles with the man until the morning. So how can I reconcile the two halves? If he's by himself, then there's no one else there. But I can say no. That Yaakov, in reality, just give me a second to say it, and then I'll try to prove it, that Yaakov, in reality, wrestles with himself. And that's why it says Yaakov is all by himself. Of course, the weakness in this is the immediate use of the word ish, that a man wrestles with him. So a man wrestles with somebody else there. To which I would respond then, maybe. If you were to look in the Chumash for the word ish, and where it was used prior to this, you'll find something interesting and look at source number two. Ve'yifrotza ish ma'od ma'od. The man burst out exceedingly. Ve'yihilo tzon rabot u'shvachot v'avadim u'gumalim v'chamarim. He had a great deal of flocks, servants, female servants, camels, donkeys, and so on. Who's this man that it's referring to? Who's this pasuk talking about? Pasuk's talking about Yaakov. So what's interesting is that when it speaks of Yaakov having made it financially, having been successful, the specific term that it uses is ish. the man. So that then causes me then to go back and to reconsider that Yaakov's all by himself and a man wrestles with him, especially when the word Ish is used to describe Yaakov himself, but which side of Yaakov? You ever do yoga? Excuse me? You know, when Yaakov, just to get a little bit more dramatic, it says, "Vayakom b'layla hu." Yaakov gets up that night. V'yikach et shtei nashav ve'et shtei shfachatav ve'et achadas erdav ve'avor et ma'avar yabok. What is yavor? He crossed over a stream. V'yikachem v'yirim et hanachal ve'yaver et asher lo. And then v'yifter Yaakov levado. Rashi here writes, and this is definitely, you can connect this to Hanukkah, shachach pachim ktanim. He forgot some small pachim. That is, pachim. Jars. Which, to what extent is related to pach katan by the Hanukkah story. Yaakov forgets something and goes back. Now, I think Yaakov has a problem. And I want to raise a couple of other questions right now. I'm really disappointed in Esav. That's not a question, it's a statement. I'm really disappointed in Esav. The Esav that we've come to loathe and respect and to be afraid of and so on is a man who's bloodthirsty, wants to kill him. And it seems to me pretty clear that his intentions are stated when he comes to this reunion with 400 men. I mean, 400 men means, if you want to tell me that this was part of the band, you know, and he's going to play music for him and make a big welcome party, none of you believe it, so why should I even say such a thing? When it says he's there with 400 men, the impression that we're getting is that he's coming with soldiers. Who else gets that impression? Yaakov gets that impression, which means Esav is not very happy. Why is he not happy? Because Yaakov has messed him up more than once. Yaakov took from him the birthright, and Yaakov took from him the blessings. Okay. Does Esav basically come and say, well, bygones, you know, whatever it was, and let's just move on? Or is Esav not that happy? What's the answer? He's not that happy. How do I know he's not that happy? Because he shows up with 400 soldiers. Yaakov, you know, tries to, you know, send gifts, whatever, and Esav is coming out. So therefore, when Esav sees Yaakov's wealth, what should Esav's response be? Again, go back to the Esav who we love. What should his response be? Can you get in touch with your inner Esav now? What should his response be? That everything that you have is mine. I mean, that's what we're expecting of Esav. So Esav, you know, he's going to send Esav 10 camels, but he's got another 100 camels. What should Esav's response be? You rob me. You take all my stuff away, and then you're going to give me a couple of them back? Like, what are you talking about? By the way, if you start going into the Midrashim, that Yaakov is supposed to marry Rachel, and Esav is supposed to marry Leah, so what else should Esav be taking over here? Yeah, he should be grabbing her and say, "This, she's mine. I'll take Zilpah also from a good measure. And if Bilhah's cute, take her also." Meaning, that should be the response. That's the Esav that we love. So the question then is, yeah, we avoid the confrontation over here. We have this foreshadowing of the confrontation is going to take place. Esav is poised to go crazy, and something goes wrong over here. Yaakov has the confrontation the night before, gets wounded, gets hurt, limps away from it. But when we get to the real thing the next day, everything works out. How do they say in Dvash? Right? Everything's peachy here. Everything works out well. Why? Which means, what? I'm not going to say, you're going to say what went right. I'm going to say what went wrong. I just want to read it from Esav's perspective. What went wrong over here? What suddenly happened? And what's Esav's response afterwards when he sees all this stuff? He offers and he goes, "No, I got a lot of stuff." He goes, "No, I got." I mean, what happened to Esav? Do we have any of these sources on Esav over here? Look at source 3. V'yisa Yaakov einav v'yar. V'yinei Esav bo, v'yimor rabar mot ish. V'yachat et ha'yildim im le'ev al-rachel al-shtei shvachal. He says, dividing them all up, putting them in different places, whatever. And then Esav, in source 4, What does he finally say? I'm going to kill you. Again, we're expecting him to murder him, to rip him into pieces. Take all the cattle, take all the women, take everything. We expect Esav to take everything, because as far as Esav is concerned, everything here is his. And what does Esav say? Vayomer source 4, Nis'av v'nelcha v'elcha l'negdecha. Come, we'll go together. Vayomer lov adoni yodeh ki yodim rakim v'atzon v'abakar alot olayot v'okam yamachad u'meit u'kol atzon. He goes, no, you go on. You go on. All the stuff I have slows me down. I got to go slower. I go too fast, everything's going to get ruined. And by the way, you wonder to what extent Yaakov going slower is somehow connecting to hurting his leg. What happens when you hurt your leg? Then you have to go slower. So is there some kind of metaphor being used over here as well? Or is this totally independent? By the way, on top of all that, the other thing which is at first face value preposterous, that just because Yaakov Avinu hurt his thigh, what in the world does that have to do with us keeping kosher today? What in the world was that connection? Oh, Yaakov hurt his thigh, so Jews to this very day don't eat the Gidanasha. What in the world are you talking about? And I was kidding about his rib, but did any of the Avos or the Imos ever hurt anything else along the way? Nobody ever hurt anything. I mean, they hurt something, that's it. We don't do that. I mean, what in the world is the connection over there? And yes, we take all these things for granted because, you know, we eat these animals, we don't. It's as if all kosher makes sense to us. So as much as kosher doesn't make any sense to us, what in the world? Here we're given a reason for it. Don't eat Gidnasha because Yaakov hurt his thigh. Great, so now we understand. So we finally got a little bit of an explanation, so we're happy. So guess what? I'm not so happy. Why aren't I happy? What in the world is the connection? Oh, Kamoshim Rimayom, Makeshe. This is a Makeshe Amiti. Not like when most of them say, Makeshe. Do you like any of my questions or no? Right? So, Yaakov and Esav had an impossible relationship. And there was a clear division between them. The division was that Yaakov was an Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. Yaakov is a simple man who lives in tents. And Esav is an Ish, man of the field, a hunter, and so on. So you asked me before where I'm from and so on. I'll tell you what's interesting. You know, when people move and they're in different situations, it's especially true. It's true in other senses as well. But when you go away, you tend to basically evolve over time and to become something very different than you were before. But sometimes it becomes most acute to you when you go back to where you came from. Like you go to Israel for a year, you don't notice every single day that you're changing, unless you go to seminary. Go to seminary, then you look in the mirror every day. See mirror on the wall, who's the firmest one of all, or things like that. But for most people, there's a very, very gradual shift that takes place over time. And you don't notice it. But when you go back home, after being away a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, then you realize how different. First, you realize how much that place has stayed the same. You realize how much different you are because something has happened along the way. Yaakov is now back on his way back home. I said, if I would overly dramatize this, I would say that moment as he crosses by that stream, you know, it's at night, there's a strange moonlight out there. I actually know which day of the month it was, but there's a strange moonlight over there, and he sees his image in the stream, and he looks at himself, and something that he sees troubles him greatly. And I want to now pause for a second. In the very beginning of last week's parsha, right, Vayetze, we have Yaakov leaving home. Now we have Yaakov going back home. Is there any difference between these two points in time? When he left with absolutely nothing in his hands. He had the clothes on his back. And what does he say to God? What's his great prayer? Please give me bread to eat and clothing on my back. That's all that he wants. He comes back now. So how does he come back? So what does the Torah call him? Now Yaakov's the man. Now he's got slaves. He has servants. He has wives. He has kids. Yaakov has an entourage. Yaakov, he's not the same Yaakov that left. But there's another thing. It's not just that he was one person and now he's a whole camp. Or as he puts it even, now I'm two camps because he divides them. There's something else which has happened. When Yaakov left, and there's a couple ways of saying this, but when Yaakov left, he was still the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim. And therefore his dreams are the most modest things. Again, clothing and bread. When he's come back now, he's coming back and he's become involved in all this other stuff as well. Or if you want, in last week's parsha, there were two dreams that Yaakov has. A dream in the beginning, a dream in the end. The dream in the beginning, he dreams of angels going up and going down. And dreams at the end, he's dreaming of sheep. So what you dream of is some kind of an indicational kind of world you're in. If Yaakov in the beginning of the parsha is dreaming about angels, so that tells you a little bit about where he's at. If Yaakov at the end of the parsha is dreaming about sheep, that tells you where his mind is at now. So what now, what has happened? So the answer is that Yaakov has changed. That Yaakov is not the same person who left all those years ago. And when Yaakov sees his image in the water, as I said in our dramatized version of the story, when he sees his image, he sees something that he never really saw before, but now it strikes him. And what is it that he sees? He sees that he looks a lot more like Esav than he ever noticed before. Because, of course, that's the great irony of the whole story. When you steal the blessings designated for Esav, you end up having to live Esav's life as well. And you have to live Esav's life as well, you become much more Esav-like than you ever possibly imagined. Which means instead of dreaming of angels, you dream of sheep. So you can say the reward or you can say the punishment, but the result of Yaakov taking the brachot is that now Yaakov got the brachot designated for Esav, that now Yaakov needs to lead Esav's life as well. And now Yaakov comes to this point where he asks himself the most haunting question which man has ever asked themselves. And that is, who am I? Am I Yaakov or am I Esav? Or in other words, who am I? What has happened to me? And again, you can't help but make this contrast comparing to the two tribes he's crossing over this river. He crossed over one way to leave, he's crossing over the other way to come back, and here he is, and he's just looking at it and saying, what happened to my life? And again, I don't want to overly state it in terms of, you know, Yoshev Ohalim, the way that, you know, certain people want to say it, but Chazal seemed to say it. Ohalim is the Ohel of Shame, the Ohel of Torah. Again, to what extent there really was a Beit Midrash, to what extent he really was learning a Gemara at that point, that's irrelevant. It's essentially Yaakov was a simple man, a simple life, and now everything got complex. That's exactly my point. For Yaakov, everything is complex. Why is everything complex? Because now he's got Esav's life as well. Because he's not just Yaakov Ishtam, O Yoshev Olam. Because if he was Yaakov Ishtam, then nothing would be complex. That's exactly my point. The whole complexity in his life is because he's living somebody else's life as well. Because he's living somebody else's wife, he ends up having to marry both Rachel and Leah. That's the complexity now. That's exactly what the Medrash is saying. It says the younger one for the younger one, the older one for the older one. So now who is Yaakov now? Yaakov is the Bechor. Why? Because he bought the Bechor. But he's also the younger one. So who does Yaakov marry? He marries Leah, but he also marries Rachel. He marries Rachel. He also has to marry Leah. Yaakov now has to do both. Which means the fact that he has to end up marrying both of them is an expression of Yaakov being both Yaakov and Esav. That's exactly the problem in Yaakov's life. Why doesn't Esav kill him? Because Esav looks at Yaakov, and when they were young, they had a fierce ideological battle between the two of them. What was the battle? Yaakov's a man of spirit, and Esav's a man of this world. And the world of Yaakov and the world of Esav can never be reconciled. They're enemies. They're interested in different things. They have nothing to talk about. And Esav comes back to finally punish, kill, take revenge on Yaakov. And he sees something. He sees something he never saw before. And what is it that he sees? He sees the exact same thing that Yaakov saw the night before. He's looking at Yaakov, but he sees himself now. Yaakov has become Esav. If Yaakov has become Esav, so what does Esav now say to him when he meets up with him? Come, let's join forces. Let's go march together. Which means all the old fights and all the old battles, all the debates, the different approaches, the different opinions, what's more important. Esav looks at him and he laughs. This is the funniest thing he ever saw. That Yaakov ended up growing up, as far as Esav is concerned, growing up, forget about this idealistic youth that he once was, spiritual world and spiritual self, and make the world a better place, and all the other blah, 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 as far as Esav is concerned. And what has Yaakov instead become? He's become a man involved in this world. He's become a businessman. He's finally figured out what's important. And there's no longer an ideological divide between the two of them. That's what Esav sees. So Esav's response now, you realize, is the only logical response. There's no reason for us to fight anymore. Now we can really join forces together because now we've become the same person. Now we're together. For Yaakov to notice it was the scariest thing he ever saw. For Esav to notice this was the happiest thing he ever saw. Yaakov then goes into a struggle. And again, the way that I'm describing it is the struggle is with himself. The struggle is between Yaakov and the Ish. Yaakov now has to struggle. Who am I? Who have I become? What in the world has happened to the Yaakov who I used to be? I'm no longer him. Something has changed. Esav, on the other hand, is looking at him and says, he's no longer Yaakov. He's like Esav 2.1, and now we can join forces. So they see the same thing, which means the same problem, the same thing which is a problem, which causes us difficult to understand what happened to Yaakov, is the solution regarding why Esav is at this point ecstatic and backs off from the murder which he was set up for. He's poised to kill them. He's poised to take all the possessions. He's poised to take all the women. All that he was prepared to do, that's why he came with 400 soldiers, but now he stops. He stops because of the exact same thing. So now let's go back and read the words, because you're going to say, what are you talking about? Why is it written in such a difficult way? Because again, I'm going to say exactly what the words say. Vayivater Yaakov levado. Yaakov's all by himself. Vayavik ish imo alel teshachar. And Yaakov struggles with the ish. Who's the ish? The ish is the one who's made all this money. Who's Yaakov? Ish tam yoshev olam. Yaakov is struggling with himself. And I do want to pause right now. Yaakov is struggling with the part of him which has lived Esav's life. It's the power of Esav. That, I think, is what Chazal mean when they say it's Saro Shel Esav. It is the power of Esav that he's struggling. Yes, that's exactly the point. Yaakov is struggling with the power of Esav, but the problem is it's not that the power of Esav is something which is independent. It's that the power of Esav is something which has become a part of Yaakov's personality. That's the problem. So if what I'm saying is correct, we just now reconcile that first verse. What does that mean? That no resolution was forthcoming. This was an impossible situation. Who am I? Am I Yaakov or Esav? Right now, his leg gets hurt, and that's going to become crucial. And then it comes to explain the leg of Yaakov was hurt when he wrestled with him. Why? And now I'm going to go back. There is something dreamlike in this. I understand why the Rambam and others say there is something dreamlike because what we're dealing with is some kind of an internal struggle, which of course you're going to then say to me, if it's an internal struggle, then why does it have an external manifestation of it? I'll try to come back. He says, let me go because the dawn is right. No, unless the blessings which I have, unless I could be blessed. Now this takes us back, I think, to the key. Because what is the point of the whole struggle? It's the blessings. Why did Yaakov get into this whole situation in the first place? Because of the brachot. So the brachot somehow need to be elevated or sanctified. I will explain. Goes back, who are you? He goes, I'm Yaakov. So if he is Yaakov, then who is he not? He's not Esav, and he's not the Ish. I'm Yaakov. Which means, deep inside, despite everything which has changed, what does Yaakov say? I'm Yaakov. That's who I am. I'm Yaakov. Now, if anybody else was looking at him and saying, well, what are you talking about? You're Yaakov. You're not the Yaakov of all those years before. Basically, say to Yaakov, you've lost your innocence. You've lost, you know, you've lost your drive. You've lost your spirituality. You're not who you were. But what does he say? I'm Yaakov. But Yomer lo Yaakov yemer od shemecha ki im Yisrael. That's the other thing which is real interesting in this. as much as we like to talk about this, oh, this is Yaakov and Sarah Shal Esav, so why? Where did God get into all this? Yaakov says, who are you? And he says, why are you asking me my name? Yaakov's asking, you know, this other side, is there anything has remained? This Ish, what's there? Now, before I go further, I just want to go back a second. There is a resolution over here. The resolution is something new, which is called Yisrael, which really leads us to a much larger problem, which we're not going to resolve today. And that's a problem going through the rest of Tanakh from this point onward. And really, what is the difference between Yaakov versus Yisrael? Because as much as this other person says, oh, you're no longer Yaakov, now you're Yisrael, but he still becomes Yaakov again. Which is, Yaakov doesn't disappear. Yaakov stays, but there's just something new which is introduced. The new thing which is introduced is called Yisrael. And Yisrael is the struggling with man and with God, or man and the divine, or man and the holy, if you will. So again, Yaakov says, who are you? And he says, why are you asking my name? But you cry Yaakov makom Pniel. Yaakov calls the place Pniel, why he saw God. Kiwa iti Elokim. Again, where did God get into all this? And again, especially if you go the other direction, it's a Sarah Shal Esav. Where's God involved in all this? And then finally, once again, the conclusion, and therefore, because he heard us die, we don't eat Gidon Asha, which you say, okay, what in the world does it have to do with anything? So what's the resolution? What really is ultimately the Jewish resolution between the struggle between the physical and the spiritual? And I think it's a very simple question, very simple answer, yeah? Go ahead, give the simple answer. Correct. The struggle between the physical and the spiritual is that in Judaism, the physical is not bad. Yes? In Judaism, the physical is neutral. This applies, by the way, to many, many things in Judaism. You know, part of the way that we suffer from living in a Christian society is that in Judaism, sexuality becomes bad. No, sexuality is neither bad nor good. It's neutral. Context will describe it, something good or bad. All physical things, by definition, are neutral. They're neither good nor bad. Context will describe, is this the best thing in the world or the worst thing in the world? Which means Yaakov getting involved in the physical world is, by definition, as boring as it sounds, neither good nor bad, is basically neutral. For Yaakov to leave the Ohalim and to become man of the, if you want to call it the Gashmiut, right, of the physical world, for Yaakov, this is something which is very, very, it's very striking and it's very traumatic, and that which is exactly what our struggle is over here. But move towards the resolution. What exactly is the resolution here? The resolution, to me, is fascinating. The resolution is, think about what it's telling us at the very end. Are you allowed to eat meat? Yes. Is eating meat by itself something which is a physical or a spiritual thing? It's basically a physical thing. Right? Any of you vegetarians?
Yeah.
Yeah, vegetarian? Yeah?
Pescatarian.
A what?
Pescatarian.
Whatever. You eat fish, huh? Okay. Well, all my food is vegetarian. Right? Cows eat vegetables and stuff. Anyway, the eating steak, for example, is something which is, again, it's gashmiut. Whether it's moral or not, we could discuss later. But it's and whether it's healthy or not, we discuss also. It's something which is a physical thing. But the resolution here is so interesting that when you eat physical food and whatever, so now infuse it with spirituality. Which means that being the solution, let's put it this way, that being the conclusion of this episode, therefore tells you it's the solution of the episode. Is that clear? Because the idea of kosher is the conclusion of this episode, it therefore also has to be the solution of the episode as well. Which means, and once I say that, I think it's going to become very, very obvious that Yaakov is now, or Jews throughout generations, we're being told, oh, you're going to eat meat, but therefore make sure that there's a spiritual aspect to this as well. You can't eat this, you can't eat this, which means there are divisions. I also want to go back to the metaphor of the slowing down, walking slowly, whatever, which means Yaakov gives Esav a fascinating answer. What does he say to him? All the stuff that I have slows me down. You go ahead. My stuff slows me down. Years ago, there was a bumper sticker. Whoever collects the most stuff before they die wins, right? There is something very depressing about a life just trying to collect more and more and more stuff. Yaakov over here has collected all this stuff, and it scares him because now he looks, okay, who am I? So what's the resolution? That the stuff that you have needs to be infused with holiness. The stuff that you have needs to have Kedusha to it. Which means Yaakov's perspective of the stuff and Esav is very different. When they discuss it later on, Esav's going to say to him, Yaakov's going to offer him stuff, and Esav's going to say, Yeshli Rav. Bless you. I have a lot of stuff. Yeshli Rav. I have a lot of stuff. And Yaakov's then going to say back to him, no, you take it. Why? Yaakov will say, Yeshli Kol. I have everything. By the way, that is so telling. Esav is this guy who's got a lot. He goes, I have a lot. When you save your lot, what's the implication you're saying? That there's a lot more that I don't have. I have a lot, but there's other stuff I don't have. Yaakov, when he says, I have everything, what's he saying? Again, that's the whole thing. I have everything. Everything I have, that's what God wants me to have. Which means that despite the Esav and Yaakov, right, despite this Esav type of ideology or philosophy, or more apt would be to say, despite the Esav life that Yaakov has been forced to lead, what Yaakov is really saying at this point is, you know, this stuff, it slows me down. You go ahead, I'll catch up to you. All the stuff I have, I got to go slower. By the way, what's also very telling, and you won't believe how far some sources go because of this. The final verse there says, in source 5, V'yashav v'yomahu Esav l'darko Seira. Esav goes back to a place called Seir. Seir is a very interesting place. What do you see within the word Seira? Okay, it's the hairy. It's also the Seir is also a goat, which is very, very strange. V'yashav v'yomahu Esav l'darko Seira. He goes to this place, Seir. V'yakov nasa Sukkota. And Yaakov goes to a place called Sukkot. V'yivin lo bayit. And he builds himself a house. U'l'mekneu asa Sukkot. And for the animals, he makes the Sukkot. Alken koreshim makom Sukkot, and therefore he names the place Sukkot. It's very strange. If he built a house, then it should be whatever calls the house. I mean, why does he call the place after the place for the animals, and he calls it Sukkot, and so on. As I said, this is itself very, very strange. I am going to deviate very, very far from pshat. You can decide afterwards what is pshat, what isn't pshat. But there's a Zohar that I think, if I'm not mistaken, does something very interesting with this. The Zohar is found in source number 11. Absolutely on this verse. V'yeshev v'yom ha'hu Esav l'darko. Esav goes back to his place. Eimatai. When did this take place? Bisha'at ni'ila. That this took place on Yom Kippur, the end of the day, on the time of day on Yom Kippur when we say Ne'ilah, at the very end of Yom Kippur. The Zohar then goes on to say, Deha it peresh mi ama kadisha v'kadosh baruch hu shavik l'chovayin v'kofar alayhu kevan dahu makatraka azo bahu durna v'et peresh minayu bor kadosh baruch hu l'machti b'banui ba makatu v'yakov nasa sukota v'yivin lo bayit. Alken koreshim makom Sukkot. Kevin de yatvi besukkot ha ishtazivu bin makatra v'kud shebrichu chadei bibanoi. Zakan chukohun b'hai alma u'ba'alma da'asi. So should I assume you didn't understand all of that? The Zohar here said, this is called the Raya Mehemna, which is part of the Zohar that deals with mitzvot. Raya Mehemna literally means the faithful servant, which refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. It says that when did this whole story take place? The story took place on Ne'ilah. It then does something which is very similar to what Ramban did, but instead of saying this applies to the future in terms of the Yaakov Esav struggle throughout history and how Jews and so on, it really says, and this deals with the future in terms of the Yom Kippur service. And the Yom Kippur service is where the Mikatreg, where the one who will be the prosecuting attorney, will come and you're going to give the prosecuting attorney a bribe. Azubahu durna. Durona is a bribe, a gift. You give a gift to the mikatreg. You give a gift to the, you pay off the district attorney. What happens with, or the prosecuting attorney? What happens when you pay off the prosecuting attorney? So that at that point, then they back off. So it says, that's what happened. And therefore we see, how do you know that this is Yom Kippur? Because where does Yaakov go right afterwards? He goes to Sukkot. When do we get to Sukkot? We get to Sukkot right after Yom Kippur. Now, as funny as that may sound, and maybe to use almost like Purim Torah, that's really what the Zohar is saying over here. It's saying, if you know how to read between the lines, that Yaakov goes to Sukkot, you go to Sukkot after Yom Kippur, then it all makes sense. But there is something else which maybe we're missing here. And now the question really will come down to how much time we're going to have to try to explain this. If you look in source number 7, it's a little bit taken out of Parshat Achrei Mot, which deals with the service from Yom Kippur. The main service of Yom Kippur will be with the two Se'irim. Now there's a lot to say about these two Se'irim. According to the Mishnah, the two Se'irim are supposed to look exactly alike, as much as possible as they can to one another. What's another way of saying the two things look as much alike as possible? Twins. One is LaHashem and one is LaAzazel. Excuse me?
I feel like I'm getting what you're getting at. It's cool.
One is LaHashem and one is LaAzazel, which means as far as the Mishnah is concerned, these two are supposed to be parallel goats, Achad LaHashem, Achad LaAzazel. If we'll continue then, it says, Pasuk Tet, Pasuk Chet, maybe, one for God and one for Azazel. If you kriv aron to see Yerusha love Allah, love a gorilla, Hashem, vaso chatapa, see Yerusha Allah, love gorilla, Azazel, Yomot Chaylef, Hashem, lachapera love, ula shalach, otola Azazel, midbara. So again, if you've paid attention to the service of Yom Kippur, one goat will be served for God, the other one is sent off to Azazel. The Ibn Ezra writes, he explains this. The Amar Rav Shmuel, Afal Pi Shekatuv B'Seir Chatat Shehu LaShem, Gam Asir HaMishtaleach Hu LaShem. What it means, that one's for God. The other one's also for God. V'ein Sarach, he goes, you don't have to say this. Ki HaMishtaleach Einenu Korban. The scapegoat, the goat sent Lazazel, is not a Korban. Ki Lo Yishachet. How does the Ibn Ezra know it's not a Korban? It's not slaughtered. V'im yucholta lahavin hasod, and if you would understand the secret, shehu achar milat azazel, which follows the word azazel, tedas sodo, you would know its secret, v'sod shemo, and the secret of its name. Is he being difficult? Yes. Kile yesh lo chavirim b'mikra, because he has friends in scripture. V'ni agalelecha k'tzat hasod b'remez, I will tell you a little bit of the secret with a hint. When you're 33, you'll know. So any of you 33 yet? That's why you don't know. One second. Is that crazy what I just now read? Does this bother you? You know something, say it. You don't want to say it, don't say it. We're going to give you a hint when you're 33. You'll get it, you'll understand. It's okay. The Ramban on the same place says, Rabbi Avraham, source 9, Katav Amar Shmuel, right, he quotes him exactly, Vim Yechot Lavin, Yesh Lo Chaverim, right, Tadenu, where it's underlined. Vinei, Rabbi Avraham, Ne'eman Ruach Mechased Davar. He is very faithful to spirit, and he covers up the matter. Vani HaRachil, what's a Rachil? What's Rechilut? A Rechilut is a gossiper. Ani HaRachil really actually means a peddler of information. Ani HaRachil, I, the gossiper, Migalesodo, I'm going to reveal the secret. Shekfar galu oto rabotenu zavu makamot rabim. And then he goes on to try to explain it. Umufurash mizeh perik v'lezer agadol aficha yinonim lo l'sama el shochad b'yom ha-kippurim shelo levatel et korbanam. Shenemar gorel achad la'ashem v'gorel achad la'azazel. Gorelo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'korban ola v'gorelo shel azazer sir chatat v'chol avinotem shel Yisrael alav. Shenemar v'nasah ha-sir alav.
Here
He basically tells you that the secret over here is that if you count 33 verses from this verse, is where you'll find what he's referring to. And that verse is, not to slaughter, lo yizvachu odet zivcheim, don't bring your slaughterings, l'si'irim. Si'irim is also another word for idolatry, which is all very interesting, because you have si'irim meaning idolatry, si'ir referring to the place of Esav, si'ir meaning a goat. So you have the same word over here with three different usages. And if you were paying attention at all, you have no idea what I'm talking about anymore. Right? Or are you still with me? Still with me. Good. The Ramban is a very difficult Ramban here. When he says, I will explain it, and I cut out most of it. This Ramban, I don't know. I've read the Ramban by itself. It's very difficult to understand. In Al HaTshuva from Rav Soloveitchik, there's a whole chapter on this Ramban. By the time he finishes that chapter, the whole thing makes sense. So everything I'm going to say about this is really based on my understanding, based upon what Rav Soloveitchik said. But I'm going to give it to you really in the most simplest way to understand this. Yom Kippur, we end up with this service that we're told to do. Service is two goats that are twins. One stays in the Beit HaMikdash, the other gets thrown far away. So the Ibn Ezra's whole point initially was, oh, some people say that that's a korban, that's not a korban, because there's no shechita. He goes, no, that's not true. This is also for God. But how is it for God? Because God tells you to take this and throw it away to this place. The fact that it's a se'ir, and se'ir is connected to se'irim, idolatry, and so on, is really very important. And these words referring to Esav, Seir, and so on, are all connected. We also saw along the line over here that we give a bribe on Yom Kippur. That's also where this whole thing begins. That's what the Zohar told us as well. If you look in Pirkei de Rabbi Lezer, which is source number 6, he's talking about Yom Kippur. Ki b'yom hazeh yechaper aleichem l'taratchem mikol chatotechem, and so on. Amar Sama'el Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now those of you who are not familiar with that word, that name, or who that is, Sama'el is the Sarah Shel Esav. That's the name. If we were really superstitious, we wouldn't even say the name. There are people, the Sarah, the angel, the heavenly force of Esav, as it were, is called Sama'el. As I said, there are people who won't even say it. They won't even say the name because it can bring all kinds of bad things into the room. Amar Sama'el Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribon Kol HaOlamim, Master of all worlds. Al Kol Umot HaOlam Natata Li Reshut VaYisrael Ein Ata Noten Li. I have dominion, this angel of Esav says, over all, but not over Yisrael. Amar Lo HaReyesh Lecha Reshut Aleim B'Yom HaKippurim Im Yesh Lam Chet. On Yom Kippur, one day of the year, you have the right to prosecute. If they're sinful. The imlav in the chavrusha to but if they don't sin, you have no permission. The nimlo shochad biyom kippurim. That's the reason we give a bribe on Yom Kippur. Shelo levatel Yisrael shelo yakrivet korbanam shenemar goral achad Hashem goral achad lazazel. Which means this Pirkei Belezer, which is really the main part of the Ramban, is that on Yom Kippur, God commands us to give a bribe to Satan, as it were. To Satan. Satan. Which is connected to Samael, connected to all. And where does all this begin, that you can bribe the Satan? It comes from the bribe that Yaakov gives to Esav on that day. Which means Esav in this world represents evil. Esav in terms of the heavenly world is represented by his angel, as it were, which is this Samael. How does Yaakov get out of all of this? He gives off a bribe. Over here, the Pirkei de Lezer is telling us that it's the same kind of dynamic over here. Do we need to read any more of this? Ra'as Sama'el Shalonim Tzabahim B'yom HaKippurim Chet. He sees the Jews are sinless. Why? Because we bribed him. And what does it say about bribes? Bribes can blind the eyes of the wise. Amal lefan of Ribbono Kol Amim Yesh Lachem Am Echad k'malchei asheret shebeshamayim, ma'malchei Yisrael, in be'machila v'shtiyah, kaf Yisrael in machila v'shtiyah, b'yom kippurim, which is very interesting. What's the real reason we don't? I say the real reason. Why don't we eat on Yom Kippur? So the real reason is God said don't eat. Why don't we? If you look at it biblically, Yom Kippur is the day that the Jews were forgiven for the Chet HaEgel, right? Technically, that's where the first Yom Kippur is. Moshe goes up the second time, or the third time, according to some. He goes up Rosh Chodesh Elul. He comes down with the Luchot Shniot on Yom Kippurim. The next year, God says to Moshe, okay, we're going to have a holiday Yom Kippurim, which commemorates the day the Jews were forgiven for the Chet HaEgel. What did the Jews do by the Chet HaEgel? Achlu v'shatu v'kamu l'tzachek. They ate and they drank and they made merry. What does Rashi say when it says they made merry? It says Gilei Arayot. So what are the things you can't do on Yom Kippur? You can't eat, you can't drink, and you can't have sexual relations on Yom Kippur. Because all the prohibitions of Yom Kippur are directly related to the sin of the Chet HaEgel. Clear? Clear. What is this saying? Why don't we eat, and why don't we drink, and why don't we engage in other things in Yom Kippur? Why? In order to be like Malachei HaSharet, to be like the angels. Again, Ra'as Samael Shalom Nutsa Behem B'Yom Kippurim Chet, Amar lefanav, ribon kol amim, yesh lechem am echad kemalchei asheret shebashamayim. Ma malchei Yisrael ein behem achila v'shtiyah, kach Yisrael ein lehem achila v'shtiyah, b'yom kippurim. Ma malchei asheret shalom b'neihem, yachafei regel b'yom kippurim, kach Yisrael yachafei regel b'yom kippurim. That's why we walk without shoes on. Ma malchei asheret ein lehem kfitza, kach Yisrael umdim ha-regleim b'yom kippurim. Ma malchei asheret shalom b'neihem, kach Yisrael shalom b'neihem b'yom kippurim, which is now a spiritual reason why we all ask one another for forgiveness before Yom Kippur. Not because Yom Kippur doesn't forgive it, because we need on Yom Kippurim to have total unity within the Jewish people. Ma malchei asheret nikiim mikol chet, kach Yisrael nikiim mikol chet b'yom kippurim. V'kadosh Baruch Hu shomea atiratan sheYisrael min hakategor shelahem, and so on. That why are we forgiven? Because the Satan, Samael, comes and argues for our innocence on Yom Kippur. How did all of that happen? All of that happened because the Satan was bribed. Where does the bribe begin? That's the bribe that Yaakov gives to Esau. I want to read to you a real interesting comment by the Netziv. Source 15. This Netziv is back on the verses dealing with Yitzchak asking Esav to bring him the gifts, the food, before he blesses him. V'kach li nisham. U'midrash echad tovim lacha. Sorry, u'midrash ita. It says in the midrash, tovim lacha, bring me something good. It'll be good for you, v'tovim levanecha, be good for your descendants. Tovim lacha, shata notel al yedav etabrachot. Tovim levanecha, shemitkabrim al yedav b'yom kippurim. You're going to do this, and you're going to somehow gain, you're going to get Yom Kippurim out of this. V'hainu, what are you going to get for Yom Kippurim? Shnei si'irei Yom Kippurim, achad l'ashem v'achad l'azazel. V'hu pele, because this is shocking. I know that this part was completely unclear. What the Netziv is saying is that sometimes evil has within it good which is hidden. And what he's going to claim now is that in order for Yaakov Avinu to become Yaakov, he needs to walk on the wild side a little bit, and then he's going to come in touch with all kinds of things which are really good that he never would have gotten to. Look at the next paragraph. Hinei hegiya shal Yaakov Avinu l'shtamesh b'midat ha-sheker v'ar mimimut v'areza aveira l'shma. Yaakov's going to use deceit, lies, being surreptitious. U'kiyotz b'zeh shnei si'irim achad l'ashem hu kedusha v'achad l'azazel hu ke'in korban l'kochot ha-tumachas v'shalam v'u mitameh. Avu mikol makom b'ito u'v'zman she'tziva Hashem Hareza mitzvah kamo hasir la'Hashem. What he's saying over here is, and again, right now what he's doing is he's echoing the Ramban. And I'm going to try to explain this a little bit broader now, because I know that the last couple things that I said were not easy. So let me try to explain this. Baruch Hashem, all year long we sin. Correct? You're supposed to say correct. All year long we sin. We make mistakes. So what happens when Yom Kippur comes around? So according to what the Ramban is saying, based on this Midrash, Pirkei Rabbi, and what the Nitziv is saying here as well, what happens on Yom Kippur is that God tells us to sin. What do you mean God tells us to sin? God says, take this animal, take it outside of Beit HaMikdash, and go offer it up the Se'irim. Go offering this up to this place. And that's the secret that Ibn Ezra didn't want to say. He goes, what is this idea of Azazel? It connects to 33 verses from now, which is don't offer to Se'irim. And what are we told to do? Offer to Se'irim. So you say, hold it a second. Like, what are you talking about? So God tells us on Yom Kippur to sin. As radical as this may sound, I apologize. That's why it's so difficult. God says to sin. What's the terrible sin that he tells us to do? I want you to take this thing and serve it outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Take it and throw it to Azazel. So what's Azazel? It's a wasteland. Right? That's what Azazel. It's a wasteland. So basically God is saying that if you listen to me now, I will now gather within that waste all of the sins that you've done all year, and I'm going to forgive you for them. Why? Because now I'm telling you to do it. I know again this wasn't clear. I'm going to try it again. All year long we sin because we rebel against God. So what does God tell us in Yom Kippur? He tells us to sin. Okay, now I just turned your sin into a mitzvah. Because I told you to sin now. So if you listen to me now, then all the sins you've done all year get wrapped up in this one sin. And that's how we get forgiven. Did that make any sense whatsoever? God is saying, I want you to give this gift to Azazel. I want you to give this gift to Esav. I want you to give this gift to the Satan. Why? That's now all the mistakes that you've made all year retroactively get wrapped up in this one commandment to do a sin. And at this point, you get forgiven for everything. That's what the Nitziv understands is why Rivka is telling him, you go in, because there needs to be a sin involved in this, and what's going to result from this is the Sir LaShem and Sir LaZazel. And we're looking at this and saying, what are you talking about? How does the Sir LaShem and Sir LaZazel result from Yaakov going and listening to his mother and deceiving his father? Because somehow, when we sin, we rebelled against God. So the only way to fix it, at least according to this approach, is by God telling us to do something which is wrong. So now, what is wrong just became a mitzvah. So, and I'm saying this line is in the Ramban as well. When God tells us to do something which is wrong every other day of the year, now all of our sins get wrapped up in this and they all get elevated and they all turn into mitzvot. That's the way the Ramban ends up explaining this idea of the Sir LaZazel. But I want to move backwards and we're going to try to make sense of all this and try to conclude. Yaakov meets up with Esav and he escapes the problem. How does he escape the problem? He bribes him, he talks to him, and Esav now is ready to join forces. That meeting is understood midrashically as the starting point for Yom Kippur that happens every single year. We do the exact same thing. We smile, we give, and whatever. What's the resolution at the end? Because there is a resolution. What's the resolution? The resolution is that Yaakov goes to Sukkot, Esav goes back to Seir. The fact that Esav goes to Seir is absolutely what we've been talking about the whole time. Seir is this place of Odah Zarah, it's this place of Esav, it's the goats, and all of this, therefore, is connected. Going back to Yaakov when he wrestles, when he struggles, which I'm still insisting, as bizarre as it may sound, that Yaakov struggles with himself. If the Zohar told us that the day that he meets up with Esav and they part ways, when was that? That was by Ne'ilah. So what was the night before? The night before was Erev Yom Kippur. It was Kol Nidrei. So that means the night of Yom Kippur, that night, all night, that's why I said I know how bright it was, because it was the 10th of the month. So no, there was a good part of the moon already by that point. Yaakov, on the 10th of that month, on Yom Kippur, by Kol Nidrei, that night he can't sleep. Why can't he sleep? He's about to meet up with Esav the next day. Why can't he sleep? According to the Zohar, it's Yom Kippur. By Yom Kippur, Yaakov has a struggle. What struggle does he have? The same struggle that all of us have every Yom Kippur. What's that struggle? Who am I? Who have I become? What have I done in the past year? Have I lived up to who I'm supposed to be? Have I deviated from my potential? I've become somebody else? When I look in the mirror, who do I see? Do I see myself or do I see Esav? Yaakov now is shook to his very core of his being. He doesn't know who he is anymore. When he left all those years ago, he was Yaakov. Who is he today? Is he Yaakov or is he Esav? What's the resolution? The resolution is the conclusion. What's the conclusion? The conclusion is that we need to take the physical stuff, but it's not Esav's physical stuff. It's not Yesh Li Rav. It's not I have a lot. It's take the physical stuff and elevate it and turn it into something which is spiritual. What happens after Yom Kippur? Sukkot comes. What is the holiday of Sukkot? The holiday of... Oh, so this you understood before already. What's the holiday of Sukkot? The holiday of Sukkot is we say, you know, this whole world, we leave our houses and we go into a Dirat Arayi. All the stuff that we have is not important. We go into this house, we say this whole world is just this temporary abode. Which means understanding that Sukkot follows Yom Kippur is exactly what Yaakov experiences over here. Yaakov goes directly from this conflict with Esav and he goes to Sukkot. So of course you can tell me, no, this is just a Midrashic understanding. And I'll say, yes, it's a Midrashic understanding which I saw black and white in the Zohar. It's a Midrashic understanding based upon the struggle, the bribe, and the sukkah coming right over here. Which means when I read things on this Kabbalistic, Midrashic level, then it just all jumps out at you and saying, yeah, Yaakov's resolution is saying that is Sukkot. The resolution is Sukkot. What happens on Sukkot? Something very interesting happens on Sukkot. I don't know if you ever thought about it. Sukkot actually is two different holidays. If you want, I'll try to show you exactly why this is the case, but there's a fascinating Ra and a fascinating Meshech Chachma on this. But Sukkot is actually two different holidays. One holiday is represented by the Arba Minim. The other holiday is represented by the Sukkah. What do we do with the Arba Minim? What do we pray for with Arba Minim? You look at all the prayers. I don't know. You take Arba Minim or you don't? You take the Arba Minim, you pray for rain. You pray for Geshen, which means, in other words, you pray for Gashmiut. That's what Arba Minim is. You pray for Gashmiut. At the exact same time that we pray for Gashmiut, what do? We leave our homes and we go into a temporary abode. So what are we saying by this? This is what I would call a beautiful dialectic. At the exact same time that we're praying for Gashmiut, we're saying, yeah, we don't take it so seriously. On the other hand, we need stuff. We need stuff. We need more than just clothing on our back and bread on our plate. We need stuff. But at the same time that we need stuff, we say, yeah, but we don't take it so seriously, we leave our houses. Which means the two parts of Sukkot actually complement one another beautifully. That's what Yaakov understands over here. That's Yaakov's resolution. That's how Yaakov deals with the bracha. That's how Yaakov takes this bracha, which right now has scared him into thinking that he is this Ish and he's just this Esav type person, which Esav himself is convinced as well. And that's why Esav backs down. And Yaakov instead realizes, no, we need a resolution. We need to bring holiness to the physical. And that's why the Gid HaNash is right over there. Sure, we can eat meat, but there needs to be laws of kosher. The physical things we're going to do will need a spiritual dynamic to them as well. And when you bring a spiritual dynamic into the physical, then you've transformed the physical into something which is spiritual. What becomes a wonderful metaphor for that? Sukkot. When you pray for the physical, at the same time, you leave your houses and you sit tachat kanfei ashchina. You sit in the sukkah, which represents the clouds of glory. Which means that exact dynamic is what Yaakov seems to identify. As I said, all of this the Zohar understands by reading these verses. Esav goes to Seir, that's the Seir la'Azazel. Esav goes over there, that's the power Esav. And every year we send the Seir la'Azazel, we're sending it off to Esav. We're bribing him again, year after year after year. But what we're saying really, again, it's not just... I don't want you to understand this as some kind of that there's this angel that we're giving him a bribe and he gets fooled year after year. No, it's more than that. It's that every year we do the exact same thing, is that we are throwing away our sins towards Esav, but what are we really doing at the same time? We're saying that the physical stuff that we have, we will elevate it with spirituality. The pure physical things that we throw away, that we're not interested in. We're interested in elevating it. And that, as I said, that's Yaakov's resolution over here. And that, therefore, becomes, if we go back, that's Yaakov's struggle. Yaakov's struggling because it's Yom Kippur. Yaakov's struggling with himself. Yaakov's struggling with his Ish. Yaakov's struggling with this part of him who's become Esav. What's the resolution? The resolution is he's not Esav. He's Yisrael. Something new emerges out of it. Yisrael becomes this new identity of Yaakov who is victorious. This new identity who's able to morph into something new, which means Yaakov is the spiritual side. When Yaakov takes the Esav part, instead of Yaakov just being this nameless Ish, right? Who am I, right? Instead, Yaakov becomes Yisrael. And that resolution is now there is Yisroel. Yisroel is this name, which is the Yaakov, which is able to take the physical of Esav and transform it into something which is spiritual. Seder. We will continue next week.